Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, the Taoiseach Micheál Martin is arriving into the Oval Office on a particularly frenetic day in Washington. The US-Ukraine ceasefire deal awaits a response from Moscow. Donald Trump's tariffs on steel and aluminium have sparked retaliation from the EU and other trading partners. And Democrats in the US Senate must decide whether to back the president's budget plans or shut down the US government. Well, Adam Smith, Democrat congressman and ranking member of the House of Armed Services Committee, is with us now. Hello to you.
Hello to you. How are you?
I'm very well, and thank you very much for being with us. And we want to talk to you in detail about the Democrats and where it might be going for you. But firstly, it's a really big day for us in Washington today, for Ireland. Can I ask you about how you think our Taoiseach, our Prime Minister, will fare in the Oval Office this morning, given these overnight retaliatory tariffs from the European Union?
Well, look, as we've seen, that's a very unpredictable thing with Donald Trump. I don't know. And I guess speaking on behalf of the United States of America, I apologize in advance. I think we should treat foreign leaders with considerable more dignity than they're frequently treated in the White House. So I it's hard to say. Certainly, I think it's been well established that if you're going to do well in the White House, you need to flatter Donald Trump. I think Prime Minister Starmer sort of, you know, set the basic template for how to do that. So I think that does help in terms of the relationship. But look, the President Trump is unpredictable. And, you know, speaking as a foreign policy national security leader here in the United States, I think that's very bad for the U.S. and it's very bad for the world, and I'm deeply concerned about it.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, the head of the EU Commission has already said this morning that there's room for negotiation on tariffs. I mean, what will happen today, as you said, rightly, is unpredictable. Would it be wise, though, from our point of view, to expect to start those talks in the full glare of the media?
I think you have to be ready for that. I think we'd, you know, President Trump is very public. I mean, he sets policy by tweet. He sends out a very public tweet that has profound impacts on policy. So I think your prime minister has got to be, you know, ready to have that conversation and not be in the typical, well, this is just a friendly little chat and then behind the scenes we'll do it. No, you got to be ready on public to state your case and make it clear what you want. And look, there is room to negotiate on tariffs. Every country has what we refer to as industrial policy, which basically means what do you do to try to protect jobs and economic growth in your own country in competition with other countries. That's perfectly normal. What's not normal is the degree to which our president is doing this in such a chaotic, unpredictable fashion. Just yesterday, he threatened to double the tariff, or didn't threaten. He said he was going to double the tariffs on steel against Canada in the morning. A few hours later, he changed his mind. The tariffs against Canada and Mexico have, you know, been implemented, taken off, but it's same for the rest of the world. It's impossible to do business in that environment. So the goal should be what the European Union president suggested. Let's figure out what we're doing here. Let's do the negotiation. Let's get it set. And then we can have a bit more predictability in how we do business.
The point was made here a little earlier today that there has been little or no engagement between the Irish contingent in Washington and Congress this year. Now, I don't know whether you would agree with that or whether you would say there should have been more of an effort made to meet members of Congress.
Well, I don't know. I have not met with the delegation. We have a short week back here in Congress. We were in Monday at 6:30 and we wrapped up yesterday. So we were in like a day and a half. So I don't know that they had time. I think it is a good thing. I do a ton of meetings with members of different European countries and their parliaments. And I think that is helpful. But, you know, I wouldn't be critical of the schedule in one particular set of circumstances.
Okay, but perhaps, you know, if that is the case and if an effort wasn't made to meet members of Congress, perhaps it reflects a new reality that President Trump is the only show in town, Adam, and Republicans in particular in Congress will just fall in line behind whatever he wants.
Yeah, no, I think that is a very fair point, and that is distinctly possible. And that does certainly, without any question, President Trump has undermined the power of Congress to a greater degree than any president ever has in the history of our country. He has taken over spending and a whole bunch of other issues. I would say We personally, speaking as a member of Congress, we got to fight back and try to reassert our authority in any way we can.
Yeah, just on that fight back, I know in the aftermath of the election, you said the Democrats are broken. I mean, that was back in November. Has anything been happening since then to fix it?
Yeah, a lot has been happening. Look, my point was that our coalition is fundamentally broken and our brand has reached the point where it's just not popular enough to consistently win elections that we ought to win, and we should get to work on it. And, you know, my personal philosophy is nothing wrong with having problems. We all have problems, and some of them are big. The question is, are you willing to look at them honestly and get to work on them? And that's what I'm trying to spark within the Democratic Party, is a conversation about how we can get to policies that are more widely popular. Now, what's been happening since then is a lot of Democrats and, you know, different organizations are really actively engaged in both parts of this. One, being critical of what Donald Trump is doing, and two, saying what we ought to do instead. I think what's happening is because of the, in my view, incredible damage that Donald Trump is doing to the United States of America, to our representative government, and certainly to our role in the world, there's an urgency that a lot of people feel. They don't want to hear that, you know, we gave a speech or put out a paper or even organized a rally of a few thousand people. They want to hear that we fixed the problem, that we stop Trump right now, today. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, there's no one message, there's no one tweet, there's no one interview that's going to accomplish that. It is a collective effort, and it's an effort that's going to take longer than a day, a week, a month, or even a year. We have to build the momentum and build the coalition that's going to push back on that. And let me just say, there is a lot happening on that. There is a lot being said, and there's a lot of effort to counter what President Trump is doing.
Right, because we had some analysis of this on the program yesterday, and it was suggested that in one sense, the Democrats might be sitting back, watching Republicans going home to their town hall meetings, where they will have people speaking to them who have lost their government jobs, allow that to play out, and then swoop in with the retaliation at midterms.
Yeah, that's not what's happening. I mean, I get that. For one thing, well, in the media right now, President Trump is getting a lot more attention than Democrats are. But we're not sitting back. I mean, we're doing our own town hall meetings. We're doing our own press coverage. We're organizing in a thousand different ways and putting out a whole bunch of different ideas. And then, yes, the other part of it, as, you know, Donald Trump has done more to both damage our economy and weaken our country in 2.5 months than any president probably in the history of this country. And we're pointing that out. We've had the stock market has been collapsing. Consumer confidence has been collapsing. Jobless claims are up. Inflation is growing again. All because of, you know, rash, chaotic actions by President Trump. And we're pointing that out. We're not just sitting back. We're also stirring the pot so that those town hall meetings are more difficult for them.
But he can't be stopped because he's using executive orders to do a lot of this stuff, right?
Well, executive orders are also subject to lawsuits, and we've filed a whole bunch of them. And I forget the number of court rulings, but it's several dozen court rulings that have done just that, that have stopped what President Trump has tried to do. So, look, I'm not going to downplay the problem. It is a significant problem. President Trump and his team are hell-bent to fundamentally, to my mind, destroy our representative democracy and replace it with the phrase illiberal democracy has come out, autocracy, whatever it is, with sort of the rule by one person. It is a significant problem, but I don't buy the he can't be stopped line. Mm-hmm. There's a whole bunch of tools in our toolbox, and we're using them and we're learning as we go. We're now learning what works and what doesn't.
Just on paying for European defense, which has been something that Donald Trump has spoken a lot about, and it has informed a lot of his actions as well in those first 50 or so days. People who support you, would you say, were they fed up with paying the bill to defend Europe?
I think there's a couple of different pieces to it. One, I think it makes perfect sense. I mean, Barack Obama, a lot of different presidents have wanted Europe to step up and spend more and develop more defense capabilities on their own. So that's part of it. But not to freak you out, but that's not what Trump cares about. Trump has a very unique way of looking at the world, which basically is that every relationship is just one to be abused. And he wouldn't put it that way, but that's what it amounts to, which is he's out there in the world. If there's a partner, whether it's an individual, a company, you know, a country, it's like, okay, what can I rip out of these people? He does not believe in partnerships and alliances because he fundamentally thinks that they undermine the United States. And he's wrong about that. Nobody has benefited more from the partnership between Europe and the United States over the course of the last 80 years than the United States of America. We have the most, you know, we have the most prosperous economy, most powerful country in the history of the world as a result of that arrangement.
Yeah.
But in Trump's mind, we were just suckers, so he wants to walk away from it. And then there is a group of people that wants Europe to step up a little bit more. But that's an entirely different thing than the way Trump is taking a sledgehammer to all of our partnerships and alliances.
Yeah, but I mean, you did say at the start of that piece that there were many presidents who felt that the Europeans should spend more on defense.
Yeah.
They never managed to get Europe to the point they're at now, where their full focus is on how much can we ramp up our defense spending. Donald Trump has done that. He's achieved that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, three things about that. First of all, Vladimir Putin had one hell of a lot more to do with achieving that than Donald Trump did. I know it's popular to give Trump credit for coming in and, you know, cracking skulls and, you know, insisting that people do this. But what really got Europe's attention was Putin invading Ukraine.
Yeah, but for three years, Adam,
yeah.
I mean, this has been going on for 3 years. There was never such a focus on defense spending as there has been in the last 53 days.
Oh, I'm not disagreeing with that. All right. It's part of it, certainly. Sorry, I should have made that clear. I will be very honest. I think President Trump's incredibly aggressive approach has been a contributing factor to Europe spending more. I will not argue that point.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that the threat that Putin presents has also helped. And then the third thing, if in fact Trump was using his aggressive approach just to strengthen our partners, then I'd be fine with it, but I'm deeply worried that he is more fundamentally opposed to the partnership and the alliance, and he certainly undermined it in a variety of different ways. I mean, pulling the intel sharing and the military aid and other aid from Ukraine, that was just that really weakened the alliance at a crucial moment. It wasn't just about getting Europe to step up. It really weakened us. So I worry, I guess would be a better way to put it. I worry that President Trump wants to do more than just he's not doing this to strengthen the alliance. He's doing this because he wants the U.S. to pull back from that alliance.
Mm-hmm. He has resumed the aid supplies today after that agreement was reached in Jeddah. Well, a one-sided agreement. We're not sure yet how Russia is going to respond. How do you expect that will go when the Americans visit Vladimir Putin and his representatives?
I think it's a huge positive. I mean, I've been really worried about what President Trump and his top people have been doing with Ukraine. But if they... I'm checking to make sure that they are, in fact, turning back on all of that aid. They have a tendency to sometimes say things like that and then not actually do them.
I think the Polish this morning, and you probably wouldn't know this because it's coming in on my screen in the last little while, they feel certain that the military aid has been switched back on. The tap is back running.
Yeah, that's just me being paranoid. So that's great. Good. Glad we did that. Calling an agreement is a little bit of a misnomer because Russia wasn't part of the discussion. I'm glad that the step is taken. It actually makes me feel better that perhaps President Trump and his team are genuinely interested in getting to a peace agreement instead of just, you know, laying down and pulling back and giving Putin all the power. I will say that the last 2 weeks now where we have pulled support from Ukraine, attacked President Zelensky, has only emboldened Putin and made peace less likely. What I've said from the very beginning, you have to put pressure on Putin and Russia. I don't mind putting a little bit of pressure on Zelensky and saying, look, if you're saying that we have to fight until we retake all of Ukraine and Putin's tried for war crimes, that's not an achievable objective. So you need to come up with an objective that is achievable. I don't have a problem with that. What I had a problem with was pulling support from Ukraine in a way that weakened our position and gave Putin a pass. It didn't put pressure on him. Putin started this war. He's the one we need to pressure into coming to the peace table.
And how do you feel about the security guarantee that President Zelensky is seeking, even if that means American boots on the ground in Ukraine and on the border with Russia?
Those are two separate questions. I think the security guarantees are crucial. I think American boots on the ground are a step too far. And I get myself in trouble with some people when I say this. I'm not even overwhelmingly hung up on Ukraine being part of NATO. I don't think we should have pulled that off the table before we even started negotiations. There are ways to do security guarantees with Ukraine that don't involve them having to be part of NATO. And we have security guarantees for Israel with the U.S. Mm-hmm. that are pretty solid and pretty important. Israel's not part of any formal alliance. So there are ways to do it. But security guarantees, however you do it, and there are 53 different nations that are in partnership helping Ukraine. To the degree to which you can formalize that 53-nation relationship, those security guarantees are absolutely crucial. We will not achieve any kind of peace unless Ukraine can clearly defend itself.
Adam, a great pleasure to speak to you, and thank you for taking the time to join us today on the programme. That is Democratic Congressman Adam Smith. Coming up after the break, as an island nation, should we be paying more attention to the growing threat of coastal erosion?